Ready to prioritize yourself? Your skin is a great place to start. Dime Beauty, founded by a master esthetician, is more than just a skincare company. With four skin-conscious categories, skincare, beauty, body care, and fragrance, Dime offers simple, spa-worthy products that will help bring your glow back. Whether you're revitalizing your regimen with nourishing products or building one from scratch, Dime makes it easy. The Work System, our all-in-one best-selling routine, includes a cleanser of your choice, toner, serums, and moisturizers, taking the guesswork out of skincare for your healthiest, happiest skin yet. Dime's commitment to clean ingredients and sustainable packaging ensures every product is as gentle on your skin as it is on the planet. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews and a loyal community, the results speak for themselves. Revive your skin and give yourself the routine refresh you deserve by visiting dimebeautyco.com. That's dimebeautyco.com. Your best skin awaits.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again. It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
What's up? Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 206. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Remember, before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. You know the drill. Find us on YouTube. We're on the WEI channel. Subscribe there. Find the Play Tessie playlist there. Hit the thumbs up on all the videos there. You know the drill. We're on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Sammy's here. Pat's here. Gordo's here. None of us are happy. How many games in a row should this team have won? Because this series should have been a sweep. They won game one. They absolutely should have won game two. They definitely should have won game three. They won the prior two games in the Cleveland series. They should have won the first game in the Cleveland series. So it should be a 6-game winning streak right there, back to back sweeps. Instead, they finish off the last 6 games 3-3. It's just, I don't even know what to say. There's so much bad to dive into here. And like, I had a whole sheet of things. Like, we could talk. Like, it's not even just the games. Like, they're getting hurt now. Bueller's down. Campbell, late scratch from the lineup. Marcelo's hurt. Two back to back disastrous blown games in the late innings. I talk about the roller coaster of what a baseball season can be and riding the wave. But I mean, this has just been a microcosm of it in the last, not even 2 days. Like, it's been like 27 hours. All of this has gone down in 27 hours. They blew a 6-run lead. Walker Buehler, they announced the injury there. Christian Campbell scratched from the lineup. Marcelo Meyer scratched from the lineup. And now a 2-0 blown game with, and we'll dive into it, but the inexplicable decision to pitch to Vlad Guerrero Jr. with first base open, and he instead takes you deep. It makes it sting. Losses sting even more when you feel like poor decision making went into them, and that's what it felt like today. I'm not happy right now. I don't know how you can feel, and it's not in a the team is screwed kind of way. I've now watched the last 2 games, and each game has left me livid, and it ruined my day today. It's gonna ruin my day tomorrow. Like, that's just the way, that's where I'm at right now.
I have a really fun stat for everybody. So I was very curious, because today and yesterday were just peak, like, all three phases of the game were not good. Meaning, starting pitching was great yesterday from Lucas Giolito. Offense was good enough. Bullpen fell apart. Today, you had the same exact thing, plus the offense not doing shit. So I was curious. I went through. I looked at every game so far this season that I quantify as offensive success, a good offensive showing. So four runs or more. And between starting pitching and bullpen, three runs or less. We are 33 games into the year. There have been 8 games that the Red Sox have scored at least 4 and held opponents to 3 or less. That is
Say that stat again.
8 out of 33 games, not including extra innings. Not including, because there's one more if you count extras. 8 of 33, they have scored at least 4 and held opponents to less than 3, which is pathetic. That is
with the
horrendous
roster they have out there.
Yes.
That is pathetic.
Yep. That's unbelievably bad. And it's crazy because it's always one or the other. Today it was the bullpen. Yesterday I would say it was bullpen again. Other days they're losing 3-2, 4-3, 2-1. The offense. There's no consistency in any of the three phases, and it is so beyond f***ing frustrating.
Yeah. This is definitely the first time I've been like angry this year. I like we've talked about it before. You guys are more like ride the wave than I am. I'm more kind of like big picture. I can't even think straight right now. Normally, I know what the fuck I'm gonna say the first time I talk on our podcast. Like I have like okay, I'm gonna lead with I can't get over the Vlad thing. I cannot get over that. I cannot get over it. The third game of the series. It's 2-1 in the 8th inning. There's one out, runners on second and third. Vlad Guerrero Jr. comes up. Why do you pitch to him? Why? And the craziest thing is there's no explanation that would make me go, oh, okay, yeah, I got that. Yeah, he strikes out here and there. I legitimately can't think straight. I'm not going to sleep at all tonight. I'm just going to be thinking about the Vlad. That 6-run lead they blew on Wednesday night, that sucked. But my first thought was, you know what? Early in the season, you're going to have bad losses like that. That stunk. Move on. I don't get mad when the Red Sox lose. It's a 162-game season. They're going to lose a lot. Even the best teams lose a lot over a 162-game season. But when you do stupid bullshit like pitching to Vlad with first base open, with one out in a one-run game, with two men on base, I want to fucking scream right now, man. That is insane. And I love Alex Cora, but what the hell are you thinking? It's show faith in your guys. Great. That's great to show. But read the room. And Vlad's heating up too. It just makes no sense. And it sets up the double play if you walk. I don't know. Maybe you guys know why they pitched to Vlad. I feel like I'm going insane right now.
I think I know why. And if this is the reason, it makes it that much worse. In this series, Anthony Santander was hitting better than Vlad. That being said, if you pitch to Vlad to not pitch to Anthony Santander with the bases loaded, that is insane. That is
If they walked Vlad and Anthony Santander beat them, I'd go, okay, you know what? That sucks. Slayton didn't have it tonight. Whoops, you lost the series. Santander's a good player. Whatever. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, even if they had walked Vlad, they still probably lose the game. And I am probably, I'll speak for myself here. Sammy, you definitely won't be on this train because you're definitely very locked in on the Vlad thing. For me, like I would be probably close to as pissed just because, again, it's another game that they should have won. A wasted 7-inning, 1-run start from Tanner Houck, who hasn't given them a good start all season, pretty much. I think there was 1 6-inning, 2-run outing in there. But yeah, you know what I mean. And another bullpen meltdown from guys you can trust that we'd basically been spending the last week or two saying, yeah, that you know, the bullpen, you know, they're an arm short, but those three guys, like you feel good about those three guys. And you know, last night as we're recording, it was Whitlock and Slayton. Tonight it's Slayton. Yeah, my only explanation for the Vlad thing, and again, it's not an explanation because I heavily disagree with it. I tweeted out in the moment, why are you not mocking Vlad? And then he hits the homer. maybe it's because Vladdy's a righty and Santander is a switch hitter who hits better from the left side, and then Varsho's a lefty on deck, and it's like, okay, we got the righty matchup and we think we can strike him out, and like we've struck him out throwing high velocity all day. Still makes no sense to me because Vlad is obviously the best hitter on that team. You walk the guy, you get the double play ball. Again, I still think they probably lose the game, and it just, the blame would probably be placed elsewhere because we'd be saying Slayton didn't have it. Slayton. But like, let's be real, like what the fuck is going on with this offense that is so insanely hot and cold, and the potential is through the roof, especially when you factor in the kids coming up. Like you talk about how the three 900 plus OPS guys on the team are not even Devers, Duran, Casas, and then you've got top prospect in baseball waiting in the wings. Like the ceiling is so high for the offense, but it's been underwhelming is maybe an understatement to say what the offense has been for them this year. Even in game two, yeah, they put up six runs. They had one base runner in the seventh, eighth, ninth, and tenth innings that game. And they didn't even put up a fight against Jeff Hoffman in two innings for the second time this year, I might add. So
Gordon, how about today? Yeah. They had back-to-back innings where they saw five pitches one inning and then six pitches the other inning. 11 yep. pitches over two innings?
Like, yeah. That's awful. That's terrible. It's inexcusable. And you have guys on the team. Like it just frustrates me so much. Like this game, yes. Point the finger at the manager. He didn't fully lose them the game, because again, like if the offense did their job, if Justin Slayton had his stuff, like they win the game. But all these other games, it's been so frustrating to me to see the team underperforming and see the players on the field doing what they're doing and see people say it's Cora's fault. And this isn't the episode, I guess, to do that, because I do think that a lot of this game is on Alex Cora. But I really think that today is kind of the first game where those people should be or deservingly coming out of the woodworks. Like I've seen it too much. I just think the players haven't been good enough, especially the best players on your team.
Yeah, I mean, I get annoyed every time people are like, fire Pete Fatsy, because the offense isn't working. Like you have guys who've hit their entire major league careers, and then the people want to blame it on the hitting coach. No, the guys aren't hitting. What do you think Pete Fatsy, he's not a magician. And when people talk about, oh, get this bum ass pitcher, put him in the Andrew Bailey lab, he'll make him good. No, that's not how it works. Andrew Bailey's a great pitching coach. He's not a fucking magician either. So like, but tonight, what are you doing, Alex? I think he's a great manager. I've said that a million times. We all like AC. Why? Why? And I know Joe is working on the post game right now. He'll probably have an answer for us at some point. We're doing this right after the game, man. So we're all hot, especially me. I can't even speak. So I just
Pat, do you have something?
I don't even know.
I am feverishly refreshing Twitter, and the only thing I've gotten post game is that Abreu said it was a routine play and he misplayed it.
Okay, well let's back up a second, because yes, Abreu needs to take a better route to that ball. Go look at the freaking pitch tracking. 1-2 to Bo Bichette, and you throw a sweeper right down the fucking middle. Yeah, he hit it hard. Of course he was going to hit it hard. That was, and granted, yes, like he wasn't trying to throw the sweeper down the middle. He also wasn't trying to throw multiple pitches over the plate to Vlad, which got him ahead of Vlad 0-2. Like he got ahead of Vlad with a fastball right down the middle. He just didn't have his stuff. If you're going to hang a slider or a sweeper down the middle to Bo Bichette in that spot in a 1-2 count, you're going to get beat.
But that's the thing. That's the thing. Guys make mistakes. Willie Abreu's arguably the best right fielder in baseball. He fucked up. It happens. It didn't lose them the game. They were still in it at that point. Slayton had a bad night. He's been solid all year. His bad outings have been really bad, so the numbers don't look good, but he's been good this year. That's fine. The offense, up and down, they didn't come through tonight. They were still ahead in the eighth. It happens. It's the stupid stuff that gets to me. Errors get to me. Pitching to Vlad with first base open in the eighth, that gets to me. So I'm just like, I don't know if this is good podcasting or bad podcasting. I cannot think straight. I'm not kidding. I'm not going to sleep tonight just because of not walking Vlad. That is going to ruin me. I'm going to be so tired tomorrow posting this in the morning. If you're listening and you're like, why was that Twitter caption weird? It's because I'm deliriously tired. I didn't sleep. Fuck.
This is I would say maybe not tonight, last night for sure. That is more frustrating to me what happened last night. And as we record, I'm referring to Wednesday, the blown six-run lead. That is more frustrating and a worse loss than that Rays loss when the Rays scored 16. And it's not even close.
Easily. Yeah.
I would rather get curb stomped than pretty much lead wire to wire and just fuck my own face the last 2 innings.
That's the thing. It's like, so many people think that it hurts worse, and by people, I'm talking about people that don't like think about the team like maniacs like we do. People think that when the Red Sox lose 18-1 or whatever, that has me freaking out. No. Those games are going to happen. Like, the losses that are losses from the jump, those games are going to happen. The wins that are wins from the jump, those games are going to happen. It's the wins that turn into losses that have me losing my absolute shit. It's the wins that turn into losses that ruin the rest of that night and the next day, like the second game did, and like this game is going to my tomorrow. Like, I'm gonna have a shitty Friday. I had a shitty Thursday. I'm gonna have a shitty Friday too.
First time I'm riding the wave with you guys this year. This is the angriest I can get on May 1st. By the way, when the Narv hit that home run to put them up 6-0. On Wednesday night, that feels like it was a fucking year ago.
That was bliss.
I don't even remember. We haven't even mentioned Lucas Giolito, who looked great, by the
way. We'll get there. We will get to those. If you're listening, hoping for Giolito and Hauk talk to talk about how good they've been, we will get there. Pat has two core nuggets. What do you got, Pat?
I'll start with the good one. Christian Campbell's day-to-day seems to be fine. Just scratched, more of a safety thing, day-to-day. I don't know if he's been asked why they did not walk Vladdy, but he was asked about that at bat, and he said, we had him 0-2, that breaking ball was down, but close to him, and he put a good swing on it. Alex, that shit was hung. That was not a good pitch. Also, you shouldn't have pitched in the first place. I cannot get over this.
He was lucky to be up 0-2 in that count. Like the second strike was a fastball right down the cock. Joe?
I do have an answer about Cora. And the fact is there is none. Because Nesson, so backstory here, we get our post game from Nesson, and Nesson, at least the portion of what they showed with Cora, did not have the question of why did you walk flat?
How is that not asked? I know that Nesson doesn't always
was, but it wasn't cut off. It was maybe like cut off or something.
That's the thing is Nesson airs some of the Cora presser at the end. They don't air the whole thing, but at the same time, like there's more than a couple reporters down there that could tweet this, and I don't know, maybe they're saving it for articles. But please, for the love of God, somebody ask.
They had to have asked. I'm looking right now. All the beat writers.
No, I've got them on notification. I got them all. There's nothing. Question for you guys. So it was before game two as we're recording this. If you were following me or the podcast on Twitter, you saw that PETA, in response to our, and this was going to be my enough said, but I have to bring it up now because it's very relevant. PETA, in response to our Garrett Whitlock interview where we talked about their whole arm barn craze where they want to rename bullpens the arm barn because bullpen is supposedly derogatory to cows or something. They saw that. They shot me a DM. They're like, hey, we want to send you arm barn merch. This was like not even a week ago. I was like, hell yeah, like send it over. So they sent me a care package with arm barn merch, and I've been wearing this shirt. I put it on for both games because I really wanted it to be good.
Fucking burn it.
That was the question.
Burn it. I said before any of this even happened, when we were like, I think it was recapping the Whitlock interview, the first thing out of my mouth after that interview on this podcast, you can go back and listen, I said very clearly, fuck PETA. And I stand by that. Burn all of it, Gordo. Burn it tomorrow. Burn it in a trash can in the street. have some form of ceremony or sacrifice, burn all of it.
Well, you answer the question before I was able to ask it, because I was going to ask, is the stuff cursed? And I can guarantee you I definitely won't wear the shirt again. I might give the hat a try, but I don't know. It may not be worth it, because I mean, I think the armbar thing is so funny, and like I want it to be like I don't know if they got the humor in it. We're just going along with it because it was public, or maybe they thought we were like totally serious and like we're actually
got the
like,
humor.
I don't know.
PETA getting humor.
You're right. You're right. I don't know. I don't know why they send us if they just listened to the clip. The clip very clearly were like, yeah, this is ridiculous that they think this. But in any event, the back three guys in the Red Sox bullpen have been nails all season long, and the second I get this package from PETA about the armbar and stuff, they're all of a sudden not. So it might be the curse of PETA. We might need to step in there. But I'm trying to think, do we want to go, because like we were talking about pitching and we could keep talking about pitching, but it's going to be good stuff, or do we want to keep complaining about bad stuff before getting to good stuff later? Maybe keep complaining. I have another gripe. Trevor Story in a 3-for-38 slump. He had a hit today, but it was an infield dribbler. His play in general frustrates me, just because I can't take, as someone who rides the wave, and weirdly, I didn't really ride the wave with Story. Even when he was hot, I was saying, I don't think this is going to last. I think he's going to cool down, because we've seen him do this before. But as someone who rides the wave as much as I do, it's very hard to watch a guy play so well and then play so badly, because you want to buy into every little thing that you see. But he's 3-for-38. He looks every bit of it. That hot streak where he looked like he couldn't miss. Like you, Sammy, you talk about how the Narvaez homer feels like ages ago. How long does that Story hot streak feel? Like, oh my God, that was forever ago. He hasn't gotten a hit. And I'm not going to jump to rash conclusions here, but again, like every Trevor Story at bat is going to be watched, because you've got the shortstop of the future playing so well in AAA. Of course, he goes down with a little injury right now. I think he's probably going to be okay, hopefully. And I'm not saying that Story, his job is in danger or anything anytime soon. But again, like if Story struggles for an extended period of time, those conversations that were happening very early in the season, we're pretty close. I've seen some people in my mentions, but we're pretty close to those conversations picking up a little bit more. Not seriously. I think we're far away from those discussions being real. But the fact that it's even on the table to be a discussion soon is worrisome. Like Trevor Story is supposed to be one of your guys, and he's one of the leaders of this team, and we've seen what he's capable of with that streak that he went on. But it's been terrible lately, and they need better of him, especially, you know, up until today he was their cleanup hitter, and finally they moved him out of that spot today. But It's been frustrating to watch him, because when he's cold, you know exactly what the pitchers are going to throw. They're going to throw those sliders and sweepers away, 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 fastballs, up, 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 and he's not going to get to either of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened against Jimmy Garcia today. He just, it's like the book on Story is so out, and he knows it and everyone else knows it, and he still can't do anything to combat it. Here's another gripe upon your gripe. I'm going to gripe on your gripe. Why would they let Story hit against a high-velocity right-handed pitcher in the ninth inning to lead off the inning? He hasn't been good in 2 weeks now. He's been ice cold for 2 weeks.
Sammy, this happened the last series against the Blue Jays too, when it was extra innings, they were tied, and the winning run was on third with one out, and he just needed to make contact to win the game. Didn't struck out, they didn't score the run, they ended up losing the game. In the moment, my thought was, I don't want him up there because I just need someone who's going to make contact in this spot. And there's guys on the bench right now. I don't remember who's on the bench, but there were guys on the bench. In the moment, I was like, oh, I wish Yoshida was on the roster. But like in the moment, pretty much anyone on the bench, you look at the strikeout numbers. Most of the guys on the bench are going to have a better chance to put the ball in play. But yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. They're just not going to pinch hit for Trevor Story. They haven't done it. They're just not going to do it. I feel like with him, it's going to be like snap your fingers, job's gone. Like, they're not going to ease him out of a job. If he's going to lose his job, it's going to snap your fingers. Oh, shit, here comes Meyer. And that's that.
If it were a one-run game, I would have been okay with Story hitting there because he can go deep. He can hit that solo home run here and there. But you needed a base runner. You needed a guy to get on base. Story, I have absolutely no faith in Story getting on base to start the top of the ninth against a guy like Yimi Garcia. By the way, is it Yimi or Jimmy or what? It's Y-M-I.
It's like Jimmy. Like, I call him Yimi, but it's Jimmy.
All right, Jimmy? Well, fuck him. Like, either way. I would have gone to Romy. I would have gone to Romy in that spot. Okay, here. Here's a hypothetical. Who would you guys have felt more confident in that moment? Trevor Story or Sedan Rafaela coming off the bench ice cold? Honestly, who would you have felt better about tonight on Thursday as we record, leading off the ninth inning against Yimi Garcia?
I mean, right now,
the fact that we're thinking about it, we're thinking about it. You say Sedan?
Coming from me too. I'm just to get on base. If I need an extra base hit or a homer, I'm taking Story. But yep. If you just need someone to get on base, like Sedan's been walking more, like he gets the bat on the ball. Like, it's not always great contact, but he could bloop a single.
It's tough. I'd say Sedan, and not even with confidence that he would get on base. I just know it would be a much more watchable at bat. Like,
wow. That says a lot.
Yeah. I know.
Sedan's at bats are very often not watchable.
That's the thing. Trevor Story, like, as we currently are recording right now, I can tell you how his next at bat's going to go. It's going to be a looking strike at a fastball down the dick, a swinging strike on a slider outside. He's going to take a ball. He's going to strike out on a slider outside. Like, it's routine. It's exactly how every at bat's going right now. And he knows it. Like Sammy said, the book is out on it. It's honestly the same thing with Javi Baez. It's the same thing with Giancarlo Stanton. If you throw a sweeper that is even remotely close to the plate down and away, he is swinging at it, and he is not hitting it. And I guess I go Sedan, and that's coming from me.
That's crazy. I mean, it's like he's going to end up going on another tear at some point, and then we're going to go through the same song and dance. Is this for real? Is he going to get his war up to opt out? Like, we're going to have those same discussions again. But the ups and downs of a guy that right now is in the middle of their order. I'm curious if at some point, and like, again, like he's dated Christian Campbell day to day, they said, but at some point, I mean, Christian Campbell's one of your better hitters. He and Trevor Story should be swapped. And right now it should be Duran, Devers, Bregman, Abreu, Campbell, and then Casas 6, Story 7. That's what it should be.
Yeah. Sure. Get Story out of the middle. I'm not saying that I don't think Story can bounce back. We've seen him hit. I like Story. I think he's good, but like he's ice fucking cold, man. Like, he is frozen and he is not trying to build a snowman. It is bad.
I think that's the most frustrating thing with Trevor. He's not like the normal guy who goes through hot and cold spells. Like Willier, I think it was once they bumped him up to the cleanup hole the first go around. So it was after Baltimore, maybe Chicago. Like, he struggled for a little bit, but he was still like getting on base. He was hitting like 200 for about a week and a half, 2 weeks. Trevor is one or Trevor is the other. He's either hitting 600 over four games, or he is quite literally 3 for 35. Like, there is no in between. It is so volatile. And when it's the cold spell, which happened to last longer than the hot spells, it is so unwatchable. It is so frustrating because the second he gets up to a plate in a game like today, when he's struggling as bad as he is, you don't even want to watch the at bat. You know how it's going to go. And that's the frustrating thing. He's the one guy on the team, I feel like, who, even like Casas, I had more faith in today than I did Trevor Story getting on base.
I have a question for you. Have you guys looked up his OPS lately or no?
It's Trevor's? Plummeted. It's plummeted.
I know it's plummeting, but do you know what it is? I want to guess from someone who hasn't looked it up lately.
I haven't.
I am going to guess 688.
I'll go 702.
You guys both did well. He's at 698. He has dipped below 700 on the OPS. All right, next guess. In the field, what percentile outs above average do you think Trevor Story is at this year?
50th. I think he's been mid. Because he's made some bad errors, but he's also made some good plays. So I think he's average.
42nd.
So my guess would have been right around where you guys are. 15th percentile. He is -2 outs above average, 49th percentile arm strength, which is fine because since he throws on the run. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't think it was that bad, and I still feel confident when the ball's hit his way, which at shortstop I think is probably a bigger deal than I think most people who like to look at the Savant page make it to be. It's just confidence that the play is going to get made. So give him that. But the truth is, if he's not hitting and he's not defending, it's still way too early to be making rash decisions or anything. But we're now at the point where it's a conversation we just had. So it's going to be something that we're monitoring. And if he struggles, then it's just the conversations are going to get a little bit louder.
Ready to prioritize yourself? Your skin is a great place to start. Dime Beauty, founded by a master esthetician, is more than just a skincare company. With 4 skin-conscious categories, skincare, beauty, body care, and fragrance, Dime offers simple, spa-worthy products that will help bring your glow back. Whether you're revitalizing your regimen with nourishing products or building one from scratch, Dime makes it easy. The Work System, our all-in-one best-selling routine, includes a cleanser of your choice, toner, serums, and moisturizers, taking the guesswork out of skincare for your healthiest, happiest skin yet. Dime's commitment to clean ingredients and sustainable packaging ensures every product is as gentle on your skin as it is on the planet. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews and a loyal community, the results speak for themselves. Revive your skin and give yourself the routine refresh you deserve by visiting dimebeautyco.com. That's dimebeautyco.com. Your best skin awaits.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last negative thing before we get to the positive things, before we get to enough said. Injury stuff. I'm going to loop it all together because based off of what the Red Sox are telling us, none of it seems all that significant. Christian Campbell had rib soreness today, was originally in the lineup and then scratched, and they're calling him day to day. At least as of this recording, Marcelo Meyer was a back thing. He got scratched from the lineup too. And then Walker Buehler flew back to Boston. He's not bouncing back right is what they're saying with the shoulder. They're not ruling him. He was supposed to pitch Friday. So if you're listening on drop day, he was supposed to be tonight's starter. That's going to be Bayo. Buehler not ruled out to pitch this weekend and not ruled out to maybe they just skip one start and he's not placed on the IL. But the IL is also not ruled out. He could get placed on the IL, and they're saying it'd probably be a minimum stay if he goes to the IL. My question for you guys, out of any of those three injuries, do any of the three concern you?
Yes.
Walker Buehler. Yeah, I was going to say Buehler, just because he's coming Buehler. Off of an injury-prone season. I was going to just wait to hear if Pat said Buehler because he knows better than me with the injury stuff, so I'm I was going to say Buehler, though, so credit to me for being a doctor as well.
Hell yeah.
My thing is ribs are scary because you can see what can happen with like Sale and Casas. I wasn't super worried, though, because he finished the game yesterday. If it were something like
the lineup.
Yeah. Like if it were a stress fracture, like something serious like Casas or Sale had, he's coming out of the game immediately. Like you're not just kind of meandering through that. And he's day-to-day, I would imagine. He'll probably be in the lineup tomorrow, if I had to guess. Marcelo, back stiffness. I mean, we saw Story get scratched with that in spring training, played the next day. Like, it's a lot of it's, with those two especially, it's just being conservative. It's like, you're not 100%, don't push it, don't play, like, whatever. Buehler, that's concerning because this isn't a day or 2 days after his last start and he's not bouncing back. We're like up on his turn in the rotation and he hasn't bounced back. And that's concerning considering his injury history because he's had the elbow stuff. He's had some other stuff. Cord it, make it sound serious, but guess what? Dick Fitz's pec strain isn't serious and he hasn't pitched in 2.5-3 weeks. So,
and this is what Cora does too. And I'm not complaining about it because like his job is to keep the noise out. And the way to downplay noise is to make it seem like nothing's a big deal. But it just means that when he says that things aren't a big deal, yeah, sometimes they're not big deals, but sometimes they are big deals. There's been plenty of times where he says things aren't big deals and then the guy misses a month. And Richard Fitz is a nice example of that, Pat, because how long ago did that injury happen? He hasn't thrown off a mound yet. What is that? We're now 2-3 weeks from that?
Three. Yeah, three.
So, yeah, I mean, that was supposedly not a big deal, but we haven't seen him since. The bad part is when he says they're concerned, Death Valley. Like, when they said Giolito has like an elbow thing and we're concerned, that was, yeah, he's getting Tommy John. When it was Whitlock, yeah, we're concerned about Whitlock. Oh, he's getting the Tommy or the internal brace. You know what I mean? Like Trevor Story's got a shoulder thing and we're pretty concerned. Oh yeah, he's gone. So Bueller's probably not going to be like done forever or anything like that. But like, would I be surprised if he made an IL stint? Yes. Would I be surprised if they said it would be a minimum stay on the IL? Yes, I wouldn't be surprised about that either. Would I be surprised if despite that declaration, he spent more than the minimum time on the IL? Not even a little bit. That's like probably what's about to happen. I hope not.
So to recap, it really hasn't been that bad. All that's happened is the Red Sox blew a 6-run lead. Then they blew another lead the following night. And then there's also injuries to Campbell, Bueller, and Meyer. So other than that, other than those things, it's all happy roses and sunshine here in Boston. I'm not in a terrible mood right now. We're all really happy.
You know what's funny? I
love baseball.
I was at the gym the morning of game two, and I was thinking that to myself, out. I was like, this is when I get my best thinking for like tweets that I'm going to send throughout the day is at the gym. It's great thinking. But I was like, huh, I wonder how many all-stars the Red Sox are going to have this year, because they might have a few, and this could make for some good podcasting if they have a good series. No, we're not doing that conversation right now, man. We're not doing it. We can talk positively about what we let's talk a little bit about Lucas Giolito. We're 35 minutes into this thing. We haven't gotten into Giolito. I don't know what you guys were expecting from Giolito, but after his rehab outings, and this is not me saying that I was giving up on Giolito by any means, because I've been a believer in Giolito since they signed him. I was a believer through the surgery. I've always been a fan of his, dating back to when he was a Cy Young candidate with the White Sox. But based on how he looked in his rehab outings, I definitely thought we had a little bit of a road to get there, especially with him trying on the spot in his last rehab outing to do things to try to get velocity back and those things not working. I definitely didn't think we were going to see him touch 96, which he doesn't typically do. Like we usually see him averaging 92.5 to 94 miles an hour on that fastball, even in his best years. And he was sitting 93, 94 all game. The changeup was where he wanted it every single time up until there were two outs in the sixth inning. And I know that he's going to get hung up on those last, what, it was a walk, homer, homer, those three of the final four batters. That's where his mind's going to be. But the truth is, getting a quality start from Giolito, and let's be real, it was better than that. Like, clearly he's just not fully built up. He burned out a little bit earlier than a guy with his track record of being a horse would normally burn out. I was super impressed. Just the velocity being there, the changeup was just, it was devastating all night. He was basically a two-pitch pitcher, and it was working, and he looked great. And again, it all comes back to even with the couple of homers he let up, he deserved better than to have that game blown. He should have gotten a win. He should have gotten whatever. Like you see in the Netflix doc, like anytime any of these guys do anything, like last year at least, they got the beer shower in the shower. I'm sure they didn't do that after that loss. Like, he deserved something like that, and you know, it sucks because he pitched so well and he didn't get it. But what'd you guys see in Gio?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was going to get rocked, honestly. He looked so bad in the rehab starts. Like, you can look a little shaky. Like, we thought Bayo looked a little shaky in his rehab starts. The stats weren't great, but the underlying stuff was fine. So when he did well in his first start, we're like, oh, cool, okay, pleasant surprise. This one was kind of like, holy crap, I did not expect that at all. I want to be really fired up and excited about it, but they blew the game. They blew a 6-run lead, and they lost again tonight. So, yeah, great. It's encouraging to see Giolito pitch well. Great guy. Nice guy. Happy to see him do well. Looking forward to the next one. Who's he got? He's not going to pitch against Minnesota. Probably pitch the following series.
Yeah, he doesn't get the Twins.
Gordo, you're muted.
Texas. I've been saying Texas into a muted mic. Texas.
That's
tough. That'll be. I mean, they've been cold, but that's a good team. We know that's a good team. That's a good team.
I think the big thing for anybody who hasn't seen a lot of Lucas Giolito, and I can't say I blame you. He played for the Chicago White Sox for almost his entire career. He is so reliant on results with his changeup. And we saw that yesterday. Like, he was dotting it. Backdoor changeups, front door changeups. He was putting them wherever he wanted. What he has, and that's why his 94 plays is because the tunneling on his fastball and his changeup are so good. It's like a 10-mile-an-hour difference. So out of the hand looks fastball, and then last second just kind of ducks down, dives. If he is able to do what he did yesterday and locate that changeup consistently with really good arm slot, really good tunneling, and kind of sit around 94, 95, he will be very good. That being said, I'm very curious to see what the changeup looks like in Texas, because it's once the changeup goes, that's when you creep into the 2023 Lucas Giolito, and he's fastball slider, and the slider isn't sliding. Like, it's kind of a slippery slope. Very encouraging for a start. I hope he has command of the changeup all year long, because that pitch is awesome to watch.
Yeah, and the other thing, Pat, is you saw it with two outs in the sixth, but when he doesn't have the changeup and it sits over the middle of the plate, that's where the home runs come from. And he led the league in home runs allowed the last time he was on a big league mound. I believe it's been 576 days in between then and when he returned. My curiosity for his next start is to see. I'm curious if they work the slider in a little bit more than they did. Two pitch guy, general. Or I shouldn't say he's not a two pitch guy, but in this start he kind of was. He was close to it. And honestly, that's kind of how they were going with Hauk. You didn't see a lot of splitters from Hauk in his start tonight. And it was working. It was basically sinker sweeper all night, and velocity on everything was up. It was really encouraging. With Hauk, for me, super, super encouraging. But for me, with how he's pitched so far this year, it's going to need to be like two more times. I know he threw five really good innings after the first inning was bad in Cleveland. For me, I have trust issues right now with just how he's looked since the second half of last year. It's going to need to be a little bit, maybe a couple more starts of like this, where the velocity's up and you just you feel confident in him before I start to change how I approach Tanner Houck starts, because I definitely wasn't going into this game encouraged, especially with the lineup out there too. But I was impressed with him. I thought he looked great. He definitely got hit hard early, but later in the start settled down. Probably got away with, like, he could have gotten hit for a couple of runs in the first two innings. Maybe could have ended up being a 7-inning, 3-run start, 6-inning, 3-run quality start. But either way, I mean, if that's what we're getting from Hauk, we'll certainly take it.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. He did get hit hard early, got some help from the defense, got some good BABIP luck as well. But that's just baseball. So I think the 97-mile-an-hour sinking fastball, the two-seam, whatever you want to call it, that's encouraging. The hell is that? Where did that come from? Looked good. I do think that I'm on the same page as you, Gordo. I need to see a few more from Hauk, but definitely to see him continue the same trend from innings 2 through 5 against Cleveland of using that sinking fastball more often, I think that's encouraging. Definitely seems like he and Bailey figured something out. Now it's a question of the book is out on that. We're talking about it on the podcast, which means these major league teams, they have it in their scouting report. So let's see if when those teams adjust, if he can adjust back, because it's not as simple as just throw the fastball. You'll do well. So encouraging, but yeah, need to see a little bit more from Hauk to feel good about him again.
Yeah, I think that by far, I think, was the most first half of 2024 Turner Hauk has looked since the first half of 2024. Velo was awesome. Pitch mix was great. He didn't walk a guy, which was massive tonight. Did not walk a soul. He looked really good. My thing is, not only do I want to see this, obviously, one or two more times before I kind of buy back in, he's had two good outings this year. They were both against Toronto. I want to see it against a different opponent. Like, his stuff plays really well against Toronto. And there are teams like that. Like, there are teams who can absolutely murder fastballs. There are some guys who, you know, you're heavy on the sinker, heavy on the change, heavy on the sweeper, whatever. They struggle against you. Tanner has a really good sinker. Apparently, Toronto can't hit a sinker.
Toronto's also, their best players are right-handed hitters. Like, let's...
Yeah, everything's biting into them, especially that sinker. It's coming in on the hand, so it plays really, really well.
Tanner Houck struggles in general. Even before this year, it's been against left-handed hitters. So, like, yeah, when he faces a lineup, like, and a terrible example because he's on the injured list and you're probably not going to see him, but Corey Seager, like, on Texas, how are you going to get through that guy a third time through in a four? You're winning 4-3, and you're trying to get through the start, quality start, and you're in the sixth inning, and Seager's up with men on second and third, two outs. How are you going to get through that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Actually, well, I probably pull him in, like, that case. But like a sinking fastball, like he throws, that's kind of the equalizer against lefties. That's good. That you need the heat against those guys. What you don't want to do is throw that looping sweeper that gets just like hangs up there, or the changeup. You really don't want to throw the changeup.
Well, that's the issue. Is I actually disagree. The splitter for Hauk, that's what got him to prominence last year, was having that pitch against left-handed hitters.
Splitter in the fastball. Those play off each other. I'm saying you don't want to throw that sweeper or a change. Like, you don't want to leave it out. He doesn't throw
change offhand is good. Change same hand is where you got to fucking place it perfectly.
It depends. It depends. I don't know. I mean, like Santander, it was just like, don't throw him the changeup. Changeup, bang.
I mean, because he's been crushing off speed, and also those changeups were terribly placed. But
also depends.
You got to get it below the zone. That's throwing. The truth. It's the same thing with Hauk's splitter. Like, that thing cannot be in the zone. Again,
splitter
is in the zone. Yeah. It's going to get killed, even if it's moving at its best.
Yeah, I see. I like but what I was saying was, against lefties, I think that sinking fastball is really useful. That makes your other pitches so much more effective, because in previous outings in 2025, he would only have the splitter. So if they laid off the splitter, easy money. Now it's like, okay, fastball and splitter. He's also got those other pitches. Maybe he'll show you those. Just makes it a lot harder for lefties. I still not going to feel great in like that situation that you just laid out, Gordo. Wouldn't feel super confident, but just knowing he's got 97 in the tank,
that's the key.
Shocking. Yeah,
that's the key. If he's sitting, his average sinker velocity was below 94 before tonight, and tonight it was almost 96, and we saw
him
touch 97 several times.
I love that. He was just like, "What if I just throw this thing 97 miles an hour instead?" And Bailey was like, "Good idea, do it. How easy is this?"
Bang. Yeah, I hope it's not like, because we're talking about, like, because Giolito's velocity when he wasn't doing whatever that adjustment, whatever, like, it was 89 to 91 in his rehab. And I get that there's no adrenaline in the rehab starts. The players will tell you that all the time for why their stuff might be down on a rehab outing. No adrenaline. But it was crazy for me to see him go from sitting 89 to 91 or 92 and then to touch 96. In the same way that it was crazy for me to see Hauk go from sitting 92, 94 on that sinker to now 96 on practically every pitch he wanted to throw it. If he got below 96, that was pretty slow for a sinker for him tonight. But yeah, again, let's see them do it. Maybe there's something in the air in Toronto. I don't know. Let's see him do it against another team away from that ballpark. Going to be very curious to see another start from Giolito and another start from Hauk. We're going to learn a lot, because the truth of the matter is, even though they lost the series And like, it kills me to be positive at all when I'm so upset about what we saw. But the truth is, if they get the Hauk that they got tonight and the Giolito that they got last night all season, like, they're going to win a shit ton of games. They just are.
You know what's funny? We haven't even mentioned Crochet. It's kind of like standard.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah. He's really
did
good.
His thing.
We haven't mentioned the fact that Alex Bregman just drives in shit tons of runs every night. He can't do it by himself, but he tried to tonight.
Yeah. What a mensch.
So.
Ready to prioritize yourself? Your skin is a great place to start. Dime Beauty, founded by a master esthetician, is more than just a skincare company. With four skin-conscious categories, skincare, beauty, body care, and fragrance, Dime offers simple, spa-worthy products that will help bring your glow back. Whether you're revitalizing your regimen with nourishing products or building one from scratch, Dime makes it easy. The Work System, our all-in-one best-selling routine, includes a cleanser of your choice, toner, serums, and moisturizers, taking the guesswork out of skincare for your healthiest, happiest skin yet. Dime's commitment to clean ingredients and sustainable packaging ensures every product is as gentle on your skin as it is on the planet. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews and a loyal community, the results speak for themselves. Revive your skin and give yourself the routine refresh you deserve by visiting dimebeautyco.com. That's dimebeautyco.com. Your best skin awaits.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Should we get into some Nuff Said before we dip on out of here and hopefully come back to pod on Sunday night a little bit happier than we are right now? Anyone got enough said they want to go first?
I was gonna mention Juan Valera in single A for the Red Sox throwing a 93 mile an hour changeup, but I really don't care about prospects right now, so maybe another time.
Shout out Brandon Clark, stud.
Maybe my enough said is I think the Marlins' new City Connects are absolutely horrendous.
Terrible.
I loved their red, the Candy King one, the red one with like the teal hat. I thought those were so cool. These ones are so incredibly boring. It looks like, Gordo, you would know this. There were jerseys that you could make in Diamond Dynasty a couple of years ago that looked literally just like the Marlins' new City Connects.
Well, can't you make any jersey you want in Diamond Dynasty? Like, you see people.
There was a year, like, though. Yeah. I think it was the year,
butt,
maybe.
Like, all over the jerseys.
There was a year, though. I think it was when Miami first rolled out, the Heat rolled out those colors, like that hot pink, the teal, and the black. And I feel like everybody I played on the show had jerseys like that. Dude, those are so ugly. The hats suck.
It all sucked. It looks like it says SOS. It says 305, but it looks like it says SOS, which is ironic and funny. And you know what, Pat? I would go a step further. I think the Sugar Kings, the Marlins City Connects that they used to have, their old ones, I think that was the best City Connect jersey there is, number one. And now they are like maybe the worst or among the worst, at least. Who would be the worst? Like Pirates with the PGH thing.
Oh, I hated that. Those suck.
Dodgers with the all blue, like all royal blues, terrible.
Yeah, the PGH was bad.
Orioles all orange. Looks like shit.
Yeah. PGH will forever be my least favorite.
The green Rockies ones.
I like those. I didn't think those were that bad. I thought those were okay.
I hated them. They were so bad.
Oh, what's that one team?
Where's the Red Sox City Connect? That'll get my mind off the game a little bit. Give me the City Connects.
Oh, the City. Oh, the new ones or the.
Yeah, the new ones. I want to see the new ones. Like, what the hell? Why do all these other fans get to see theirs and we don't get to see ours?
Do you guys all like the yellow ones? I feel like I'm the only one who doesn't like them.
Yeah,
you're not the only one, but I like them. I'm not in love with them, but I like them. I'm not going to buy one for myself, but I appreciate what they represent, and they win every game they play in them. So
yeah, I like what they represent. I like how the top looks. Like if you're a fan and you buy the yellow jersey and you're just wearing it, I think it looks cool. But on the field, it just looks like a Peeps advertisement. I think it looks like shit.
Peeps ad. All right, I'll do my enough said, and then we'll get out of here. I would like to see one Red Sox Blue Jays game where we don't get Addison Barger glazing. I feel like,
oh man, Gordo was going off in the chat about the Addison Barger glazing.
All kinds of worked up.
He does one thing.
Every single time the Red Sox play the Blue Jays, we have to hear, oh, this guy, he throws a gazillion. He throws 850 miles an hour from third base to first. Did you see that? He comes up to the plate. He's hitting. Here's Addison Barger. He's got a great arm. Stepped up to the plate. Like
when he's hitting, they're talking about his arm. You know, you said that, and I started to notice it.
Last year, too. It's not that good.
He does one thing well.
He's not good.
He throws fast. No.
He's not that good. He's just not good.
It's him, and they also glaze Ernie Clement's third base defense.
Yeah.
That came up. It was like a routine grounder, and he was like, oh, he's rock solid over there at the hot corner. And I'm like, Pablo Sandoval current day makes that play. Relax.
Yeah. Christian Campbell will steal home and it'll be like, stole home.
Yeah. I mean, I saw people online multiple, this isn't the first time, but I've seen a lot of people say that he's obsessed with Vlad, but at least Vlad is like a stud.
Yeah.
Like go ahead and you can be obsessed with Vlad.
Yeah, you do.
I fucking glaze Vlad. Which is
why you got to listen to the radio version of the Red Sox with Will Fleming and Cooper Boardman.
Dude, shout out great, Cooper Boardman. Great,
hey,
great broadcast.
We need to have Cooper Boardman on here to have a competition to see who knows less about movies, me or him.
I don't know if I could, me personally, mentally handle that. Like my laptop would be in pieces. About 4 minutes into the pod.
Pat, we'll strap your arms down so you're resistant because every single answer that he gave,
that'd be so painful.
I could see you freaking out.
That'd be so painful.
But can I actually, I do want to give one quick enough set if you guys are okay with it. I have one question for you.
Hell yeah.
And it's maybe the question that's taking the world by storm right now.
Oh, I know exactly what you're saying.
100 people or one gorilla?
Dude.
Gorilla.
And I'll modify it like this.
Oh my God.
Four of us, like, so 25 versions of me, 25 of Pac, Gordo, Sam.
Oh, that changes it.
Versus one gorilla.
It's us. We win.
Dude, you could get 100, 100 John Bones Jones, and the gorilla would still win. It is so even close.
Sammy, no, you're wrong, because the gorilla can only attack one person at a time. You have a couple other people, you know, you just like...
How do you hurt the gorilla? How do you hurt it?
You rip its skin off and wait. You don't get any weapons, right?
It'll smack you with its back end and kill you.
Dude. Okay, but not when fucking 15 hands are doing it.
How are you going to get 15 people?
100. It's 100 people.
100 of them.
100.
But you can
people.
Only have so many guys in front of the gorilla. They're not going to be in like a like. How are they going to get close to him?
Elbow. Some people are elbowing his knees out. Some people are like hitting it in the back of the head. Like it can't hit all these people at the same time. Like easy.
It doesn't
people.
Need to. One at a time.
I think 30 people could beat a gorilla.
Oh, no, you're smoking crack. You're smoking crack. No, Gordo,
I promise you. Gordo, have you ever been in a fight?
Not since I was a little kid playing football.
All right. A gorilla stands, when it stands on its 2 feet, it's about 8.5 feet tall, and they weigh roughly 400 pounds, and they are... Oh, wait, hold on. This is
even better that they're so tall.
Wait. You say 400 pounds?
Yeah.
Okay.
330 to 400.
Just add like 2 feet to Pablo Sandoval.
Dude, 2 feet of height?
Gorillas are, listen to this. Gorillas are generally estimated to be 4 to 10 times stronger than a male human. Studies suggest that a gorilla's upper body strength is on average 6 times more powerful than that of a human being.
Let me stop you there.
No,
hold on. In theory, what if they're 4 to 10 times stronger than a person, shouldn't 4 to 10 people then have a fighting chance?
No.
You have
no
equal strength.
Because the gorilla will strike a human one time and kill them. The human can punch the gorilla as much as it wants, and the gorilla will be like, ho, 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 boom, dead. You yeah, can't do anything.
Listen, Sammy, a bunch of people are going to be dead in the process.
Under average.
A bunch of people are going to die in the process, but the gorilla is not going to kill 100 people before the 100
silverback
people
gorillas
out a way to kill it.
Can weigh between 300 and 500 pounds. They have a high percentage of fast twitch muscle fibers, which contribute to their powerful movements. They have much higher testosterone levels than humans, which is associated with increased muscle mass as well as aggression. They use their arms. They can climb trees easily, like they're walking. This thing could kill. Dude,
they're
100 humans.
Sammy,
super humans.
Sammy,
no shot. No shot.
100 humans can weigh between 12,000 and 22,000 pounds.
If you combine the 100 humans into one giant human, then I'd be like, okay. But how? Only a few of them at a time can be up close to the gorilla. That's the problem.
Let me put it in baseball terms.
One by one.
Let me put it in baseball terms. Would you rather have a team of 9 players that all hit 300 but don't have much power? Or would you rather have a team of 8, like, fucking Pablo Reyeses and then one Aaron Judge on steroids? So it's like you got one stud, but you got 9 Pablo Reyeses. Give me the 9 300 hitters.
Dude, no. No. But the problem with this question is there is no way for a human to hurt a gorilla. The only way I can think
of... You rip its nipples off.
You can't touch its nipple. It's at your eye level. And by the time you see his nipple, you're dead. Your head is rolling down a hill.
Well, then the next guy does it. The next guy grabs him.
He's dead, dude. They're all dead.
The third guy grabs him.
They're all dead. And you know why they're all dead? Because they didn't walk Vlad. So the gorilla killed them.
Way to bring it back around, Sammy.
PETA would agree with me.
Shout out, PETA. Our arm barn has not been good. We're going to rename it Bullpen. The arm barn craze must come to a close. We got to wrap this thing up. Shout out for you for listening the entire way through this podcast. If you're just here to listen to be angry, shout out to you. But appreciate you tuning in. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. You know the drill. Find us on YouTube, on WEI's channel. Subscribe to WEI, find the Playtessie playlist there, and hit the thumbs up on all of our videos. Find us on the socials at Playtessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. For Sammy, for Pat, for Joe producing, it's Gordo here for an angry episode of Playtessie. Thanks for tuning into this one. Peace.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.